Welcome to AZMcast, a peer-reviewed, evidence-based podcast heavily seasoned with expert opinion. For all you new listeners, I'm going to give you a quick tutorial on how to use this podcast to its fullest potential. For you faithful veterans, you can go ahead and skip ahead to the good stuff. As you listen to this podcast, you'll hear contributors give opinions on everything from practice styles to diagnostic evaluations to emergency medicine philosophy. When you hear the bell ding, that means that the opinion is backed by evidence. Check your screen on your device to see the referenced paper, and we suggest taking a screenshot for future reading. When you hear the turkey gobble, that's just our opinion, and you can decide whether you want to take it or leave it. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the July episode of AZMcast. Did everybody enjoy last month's episode on the pus down below? Me neither. And since airing that episode, I have drained 7 pilonidal abscesses in the ED. So if this trend continues, this month we're going to discuss the history of pharma companies giving doctors gifts and vacations in hopes that maybe that'll happen to me too. No, for reals now. Doctors Ali Min, Chris Williams, Brian Drummond, and Chris Edwards, PharmD, PSP, will be continuing our odyssey of pus by talking about plain old cutaneous abscesses. Where do they come from? Are they all MRSA? If they are, do I care? And what about all the old stuff I was taught compared to some of the new techniques that people are trying? We'll cover a bunch of techniques, tricks, and most importantly, things that sound good but won't work in this month's episode of AZMcast on cutaneous abscesses. So running away from this area as quickly as possible, let's talk about just general cutaneous abscesses, okay? So again, I was kind of in medical school when the MRSA spiders invaded, and so I was kind of taught at that point that every abscess was MRSA. But boils, furuncles, and carbuncles, which are cool words that we don't get to use enough anymore, have been around for a long time that were not associated with methicillin-resistant Staph aureus. And these kinds of abscesses, you would get a hair follicle, you get a sebaceous gland, you get something that would just kind of gather around and would form this little pus area, and then it would pus out. But now in the MRSA era, we're worried that any abscess must be MRSA. And so we're a lot more aggressive with throwing antibiotics at people and getting wound cultures because I was worried that it might be MRSA. Brian, did you kind of, what was kind of this transition for you in learning about like this new MRSA abscess that we had to be concerned about, and how has that kind of cooled off recently?
Well, I think initially when it was, you know, MRSA's out there, so, you know, these are these rare things, they're kind of necrotizing, they eat away the tissue, and it's different than this, you know, Dr. Pimple Popper, pop it and get the pus out and be done. And so it became this, like, what are we going to do with these? And so it was, all right, you treat them, but then it was also, well, we don't want this around, so we need to eradicate MRSA. And so it became this, well, you've got to treat the abscess, but then you're going to put them on Bactroban nasal cream and Hibiclens showers, and they're going to do this for over a three-week period, and then they'll be clear. And people were clear, and then it would recur at 12 months, and then they started recurring at 6 months, and then they would recur at 3 months, and then we said, this is stupid. And we stopped doing the Hibiclens and the Bactroban, and we just said, you know what? Everyone's got it. It's out there. We're going to see the abscesses that have MRSA, and we're going to see the non-MRSA abscesses. So now we have two in the community. But, you know, I think, Aaron, you were even mentioning before that sometimes you'll still do it in certain kids to try to do eradications for certain populations. Is that fair?
Yeah, especially younger kids where they've got a large butt abscess and they've had recurrent ones, mostly just because the harm in some of these things is pretty low. You know, a cap full of bleach in a bathtub, a Hibiclens or chlorhexidine soap. And I mean, this is pretty low-risk stuff, and taking one of these kids in to drain a butt abscess usually requires going to the operating room and really making sure that we get it all out. It's more of just trying to help these kids out so that they're not in egregious pain. But then we find some kids are just colonized, and sorry, this is going to be it for a while. So in distinguishing these MRSA versus non-MRSA type abscesses, you can wait for the 48-hour wound culture, which we'll get to later on why you don't need to wait for it nor obtain it. But how do you distinguish these clinically?
I clinically look at them. To me, MRSA usually has, it looks like a multi-headed a lot of times. So there'll be like this little bump of a white head, another little bump of a white head, maybe a little black head. Like
some matting.
Some matting to it. MRSA usually has less actual pus in it. So a lot of times you go to drain it and you cut it open and you're like, there's no pus. But there's a bunch of dead tissue in there. And so it's more of a debridement. And you start debriding these, and then you get this big ulcer because you've just taken away all this dead tissue, but there really wasn't much pus in it. So it creates more of this hole. I mean, we used to describe it as this rodent ulcer kind of forming, almost mm-hmm. like a basal cell carcinoma. I mean, that was the look of a MRSA abscess. And so it's more of a destructive tissue than a true pus forming. Whereas you come up on these other probably non-MRSA where it's a bump, maybe a little redness. You cut it open, all the pus goes away, and there's like nothing there. It looks like normal tissue again. And so you're kind of like, oh.
It's a cleaner.
And I think we'll talk about this in treatment, and I think that's where certain treatment you can change based on what you find clinically. A lot of times MRSA will also have more of a surrounding redness than the MMSA, you know, just a staph bug, a non-MRSA. I find that's another telltale sign.
Yeah, I find that MRSA is usually an abscess with cellulitis, where it sounds silly because if all you've ever seen is MRSA abscesses, you're like, well, all abscesses have cellulitis, and they don't. And I've been actually seeing a lot more abscesses that are not associated with cellulitis.
Yeah,
this one girl came in, she gives herself insulin injections, and she had a very focal golf ball-sized abscess that as soon as we IND'd, the skin just kind of flopped down and went flaccid, and there's no cavity. These MRSA abscesses tend to be this cavitary, really invasive kind of, like Brian said, necrotizing infection, whereas a lot of just boils, furuncles, will just cause a collection of pus in that area and aren't necessarily going to be as invasive. So you're going to treat these very differently. And that's where the epidemiology comes in of if you're practicing in 1979 versus 1999 versus 2019, you're going to have to adjust to what the epidemiology is. Chris, have you seen any kind of change in, I know we're not supposed to be getting wound cultures per se, but in how much of this stuff is coming back as MRSA from skin and soft tissue versus not?
Fortunately, you're right. We're not getting a lot of wound cultures on these types of patients, so I don't have even anecdotal experience there. But you know, looking at the rate of non-MRSA Staph aureus isolates that we get back in the hospital versus MRSA isolates on the antibiogram, it's still about 50-50. But I think that clinical gestalt in terms of
haggis.
Yes, haggis. There we go. I think there is some utility to that, particularly when making the decision about whether or not to use antibiotics at all. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I think another thing I see in the MRSA abscess, when you cut them open, the subcutaneous fat appears this yellow, green, kind of white, almost it's dead compared to that normal bright yellow orange with red little tiny capillaries that you can see. And so that's something different. You also get almost these little clots in there, these little small clots. It's whether it's bled and then, you know,
coagulated
or it's just like dead tissue that's necrotized and turned this color. And I don't know what it is, but you'll see that in that as opposed to the other ones where you cut just pus.
Yeah.
It's just pure cloudy pus.
Yeah. It kind of smells like someone peed on a pile of burning hair. I've got like four or more. I'm almost done. So we talked about We talked about how we're going to, you know, you recognize these. It's not subtle. You ultrasound these. You look for something like a squish sign. You can look for the echoic areas or anechoic areas where there are maybe this fluid layering that you'll see on ultrasound. I like doing that because then I can measure it and I can determine, is this something that I want to go after at all? We used to say for abscesses, never let the sun set on pus. Don't just leave it and let it go, or else it will get worse and it will kill you. But then again, there's also some evidence that's saying that if you have smaller abscesses, you can treat conservatively without antibiotics and maybe without even IND intervention. Just warm soaks where you're soaking the area for 10, 15 minutes to kind of loosen up that skin and allow it to kind of drain on its own. Or warm compresses. If it's not, you take a warm washcloth and you just keep holding it to that area. And then sometimes even just antibiotics, especially if you've got a lot of little ones and they're real small, maybe you can get on top of it before it becomes something big. But there is some conservative treatment you can try for these.
I think we see patients do this on a regular basis. A lot of times when they present with one abscess, they will describe that previous abscesses, they have done those conservative treatments. Or like, well, I expressed this one and this one's gone, but then this one took over and this is the one I think I couldn't get rid of. And so I think it's happening all the time. We just don't see it without even our intervention to recommend these treatments that are conservative. So patients are doing this. I don't know if it's off the internet or they just like, well, I got to do something because it's here. Mm-hmm. So
do it yourselfers.
Right.
Yeah. Yep. So I really am growing to love the ultrasound for the squish sign in those cases where there's a mass big enough that I think I should be getting something out of it, but on exam, I am not getting any fluctuance at all. I'm feeling this intense or deep induration, and it's large enough. I'm like, this. I feel like I should be getting something out of this, but I'm really not feeling anything. Do I, because nothing is more unsatisfying than cutting into an abscess and getting nothing out of it and saying, I'm so sorry that I cut you. I always try and spin it in a nice light. Like, this opened up some tracks so that when it drains, it'll, but we don't know.
It makes us feel better that we tortured somebody. And
you know, so, and there are parts of the body, I spoke on the cellulitis about how there are areas that are hard to palpate. There are also areas that are very kind of tight, like the face and the neck, where you can have actually a completely well-developed, formed, what should be fluctuant abscess, but because the skin is so tight around it, it's actually so tight that you can't assess that fluctuance. And so you have a couple options there. One is just go on a little search and destroy mission with an 18-gauge needle, see if you get anything, and if you do, then open it up. And but the ultrasound here is saving patients from that too. And I've had several cases. One, Rich Amini actually talked me into doing, because I was about to send this patient home, and he heard me talking about it with the resident. He said, well, just see if there's a squish line. I said, fine, I'm going to teach the resident how to look for a squish line. So we went in there, and sure enough, squishy. And we thought for sure this was just an inflamed lymph node in this person's neck, right by their ear. And we had already, for other reasons, had already CT'd him. CT didn't show it. So there was no abscess on CT. And this person had a good squish line, and we got like 8 cc's of pus out of this area. And it was just so tight because the tissue there was just nice and tight. It held it. There was no fluctuance at all. So rely on the ultrasound in those cases where clinically you're kind of on the fence.
I also like using the ultrasound for, we have a lot of IV drug users and we see a lot of anticubital fossa abscesses. And so, especially when you're worried about vascular structures or depth, how far deep is this extend or whatnot, it's really nice. You throw it on the, you're like, oh, well, there's an artery and vein. I know I can go here and I'm okay. I'm not going to injure, those vessels, but I can help drain this abscess. Or the same thing on the lower hand or, even on the neck, as Chris is describing, where, oh, there's the jawbone there. Here's deeper structures. I'm okay doing this. We do this even with peritonsillar abscesses. Oh, I see the carotids at 8 centimeters now because the abscess is swollen out. I can easily go 3 centimeters and be nowhere near it. So it's also reassuring for what your planned drainage is going to be.
So let me ask you, when you have a patient come in and they've got an abscess and they're worried about it, but it's already draining, do you do anything else for them? do you extend the area that it's draining and incise that a little bit more? Do you, you know, do you do anything more than like, well, it's draining, good job, let's clean you up and keep doing your warm compresses and your soaks and have a good day?
Depends on why they came in. Right. Sometimes there's they know it's draining, but there's still areas that are still swelling. Well, then that implies that there is either a loculation that's not broken down or a second abscess. And also there's also there could be some cellulitis around there, and then they at least need the antibiotics. But for that, rarely does someone come in and it's a simple abscess that's already completely draining, and I just give them reassurance and send them home. They usually don't present.
I agree. Same thing. I'll ultrasound it and take a look, and then sometimes I just add another squeeze it, mm-hmm. and if all the pus comes out and the ultrasound, there's still nothing there, you can say, hey, we don't need to do anything more. But if there is something more, the nice part is you're showing the patient. You're like, here's this other fluid collection. I think we should get it out. Do you want to keep doing your conservative care, or you're here? I can numb you up and, you know, try to get this healing faster and involve them in what they want to do.
Cool, because that's what I do, and I needed to feel better about that.
So maybe talk about how we open these up?
Yeah, so first of all, I think we need to talk about that we open these up. Like, these need to be opened. And after, you can try, if you've got, probably something the size of acne, you can try to treat those with doxycycline, minocycline, or something else. But really, this, you need to get the pus out. And we've known this since 1977, when our own Harvey Meislin published the paper that basically said all you need to do is IND an abscess and it will be fine. It will get better. You don't need to antibiose them. You don't need to do anything other than get the pus out. And once you've gotten the pus out, it is going to get better. So I don't relish these, because it's usually an area that is inflamed, it's painful, and it's also under pressure. So the under pressure part is probably what I tell patients hurt the most. I always love, there's a comedian named Brian Regan that has a skit about going to the doctor. He goes, the doctors won't tell you anything about pain, they'll tell you a lot about pressure.
Doctors are good people. That's why they avoid the word pain. It's a buzzword. They won't hit it a lot. They don't want to scare anybody. Doctors will tell you all about pressure. They'll tell you all about the pressure you're going to experience. If a doctor tells you you're about to feel some pressure, buckle up. In a moment, you're going to feel a little bit of pressure. I go, no! The pressure hurt like hell! Pressure. All pain involves pressure. That's one of the definitions of pain. He could be swinging a 2x4 at your head. In a moment, you're going to feel a little bit of pressure.
So it's under pressure. And I think it's also, again, something that we tell patients to make ourselves feel better. We're not inflicting pain. It's the abscess that's doing it. Let's put all this onto the nondescript abscess that doesn't have any feelings or emotions. I'm not doing this to you. The abscess is, as I stab you with a needle or stab you with a blade or whatever I'm going to use. So what's your general approach to a cutaneous abscess? Who wants to go first?
I like to cut them open.
Brilliant.
But
that's what you do. I like to squeeze their thighs until it pops.
Yeah.
Let me write this down.
I think the important part as far as incision and drainage goes is that your incision needs to be generous enough that it's covering mostly the length of the abscess. And I say mostly. I think I can throw her under the bus now. She's long gone, but was one of our residents here. Her first shift with me, she had just finished her surgery rotation, and surgery taught her appropriately that, your incision needs to be the length of the abscess. But this person came in with a butt abscess that I was probably 20 centimeters by maybe 15 centimeters. Humongous, not something I wanted to drain. And we'll talk about, when we get surgery involved. Probably something I was going to get surgery involved. And was
slapped
aggressive.
His butt.
It was
a cruciate
incision. And and I think she could read the my face, and kind of like, well, we're going to have to call surgery because this person definitely needs surgical follow up. I'm like, okay with letting him go today because you did what you did, and you got the pus out, so good job. We turned it into a positive, but you know, the person had to follow up with surgery after that. So I say that with a caveat. If it's a, you know, 5 centimeter, 4 centimeter, 3 centimeters abscess, then you know, you can make an incision about the length of the abscess. I don't do cruciate incisions. I know it's described, but I do not do that. Mm-hmm. But if it's a very extensive laceration, it will be a laceration. But if it's a very extensive abscess, you probably don't need to extend the full length of the abscess.
I think it's an assault at that point.
Just need to be able to get a probe in there underneath the abscess that you've created, drained, and make sure that you've broken up loculation so that you've gotten all the pus out in the first place. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, there is some literature that you're not going to get a worse healing rate if you do make a large incision and you do some primary closure of it afterwards.
And that fascinated me. Has anyone ever done that? Has anyone primarily closed an abscess that you've created? Incised?
I talked about this in a lecture I gave a while ago, but it's out there. I think what it's good for patients that are non-MRSA abscesses. I don't think there's a MRSA abscess that I would feel I could primarily close. It's the one like Aaron's describing. You get this small deep space abscess. The skin looks good. You cut it. You'd open it up and maybe throw a stitch or two in. I think it's coming. I think this is going to be something that will be the future for an option for patients. Would I close it as tight as a normal laceration? No.
Dog bite close.
Yeah. But, you know, a loose approximation of the tissue, I think, with one or two sutures, I think would be a reasonable approach. Have I ever done it? No. But I know that there is literature mm-hmm. out there with this, and I think it's probably on the horizon. Like, it will become...
And the article does say, I mean, it's not better than, it's equal healing rates. Mm-hmm. And they said it's at the point now where they're saying they recommend having at least to consider it and then have a discussion with the patient and see, you know, let them know. They're not starting them on antibiotics post this. I think the antibiotic rate was the same. So,
which is crazy because that's the time that I would be like, well, maybe I fudge mm-hmm. and I give you some antibiotics. Mm-hmm. Here's the time that I would use that for primary closure is cosmesis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You've got a breast abscess or you've got a facial abscess or some place that I'm like, oh gosh, man, we're just going to leave this giant gaping hole. I don't know about
that. Although in those areas, I tend to do more needle aspiration anyway. Maybe we'll talk about that later.
Let's talk about that.
Well, I mean, just for those reasons, I think when you have an area that you're worried about cosmetic outcome, I think needle aspiration with, you know, a big needle, 18-gauge mm-hmm. needle, is a possibility, especially if it's not – if you're not worried that you need to leave it open or, you know – I think especially on face and breast is probably where I've done it most often.
Mm-hmm. Anyone into the loop? The loop drainage?
I've not done the loop.
So will you describe mm-hmm. the loop?
Sure. So you have an abscess that's large enough that this will be amenable to. So I think no one would do a loop drainage on a 2 centimeter abscess. Mm-hmm. But if you have an abscess that's you know, approaching maybe 4 or 5 plus centimeters, you create an incision basically on two edges, two sides of the abscess. You pass a vessel loop through the abscess, and so it's coming out through those two incisions. Usually you have to pass it through with like a hemostat and then grab it and pull it through and then tie it on the top, and that's it. And that just tie it down tight enough that it's keeping the two incisions that you made open. And it allows drainage through those incisions, assuming that the pus is fully developed. And it gives the patient something to do. It gives them a loop to kind of play with, and the idea is they just fiddle with it maybe once a day, twice a day, and just to keep the holes open so that it can heal from the inside out. And the same idea as like as packing would be. We don't want it to close prematurely and reform. And the idea there is that you get better cosmetic because you don't have as much of a space to eventually close over the top. I've done this a few times more just to see what it's like and just to do it. I'm not following up with these patients in my abscess clinic, so I have no anecdotal data as to how they do. But when it was first described, when Aaron and I were in residency, the article says that the healing rates were as good, if not better.
I'm not doing it because, you know, Chris mentions it gives the patient something to do. That's probably one time where I don't want anything to do. I want to ignore it and pretend that it's not there anymore. But your other options are not very good either. So the other options that are out there, one of them is packing, of where you get the abscess opened up, you take a shoelace and you pack that thing full, and then you pull it out. And then you pack it again, and then you pull it out.
And
then
theoretically, each time you're shrinking it, but...
Yeah, the idea is that nature abhors a vacuum. Mm-hmm. And so if you don't pack it, what I've been told is that, in why we do this, is that if you don't pack it, then it's going to fill right up with pus again. And then the top, the little tiny hole you made is going to close up, and it's going to be a disaster, and you're going to have to do it all over again. Now, I find that with, we talked about caveats, like pilonidal cysts, that's probably going to happen.
I agree.
So that's a different abscess than kind of the soft tissue infection.
Yeah, I'm more inclined to pack that, and then we talked about packing the Bartholin's glands, those mm-hmm. are two. Those are cysts, right? Those are cysts that you're packing.
But the article that we quote for this one, it's got a great name. It says abscess, a packing of wound abscesses is painful and probably not necessary. Great title. I'm like, well, that cuts to the point of it. Who needs an abstract? Who needs anything else, man? Your conclusion is right there.
I highlighted the title.
I wish more titles were like that, you know? Yeah. Stop doing this, you know? Stop, you know, treating patients with antibiotics for simple, or for abscesses. You know, something really, really nice and simple like that.
Yeah, I used to pack them so damn tight. And you know, and part of the thought was to the vacuum, but you're putting this gauze in, bacteria and dead tissue is going to glom onto the gauze, and then you're going to remove that dead tissue, similar to like what we do with kind of chronic wound healing, right? We put in a wet to dry dressing, and then that'll take away some of the dead tissue as the granulation's coming in behind it. So I thought as you would do that, and you'd pack it tight so, you know, again, it wouldn't bleed either because you've, you know, refilled the cavity. And then you would also, it would leave the wound open. And so you would do this repetitively to allow it to heal. And it's just torture. And I have totally stopped doing it. I haven't packed a wound in 4 years, I think. Yeah. And I just have stopped. Because no one likes taking that packing out. Right. And the patients don't like it. And then they're like, you're going to put what back in? Mm-hmm. And they look at you cross-eyed. And you're like, sorry.
Now, the surgeons will still do this. And the reason the surgeons will often still do this, and I'm probably speaking for them, but it's because we're calling them with huge abscesses or very complicated abscesses. These are not your simple cutaneous abscesses that are going to heal up and do fine. The other thing we do is irrigate these. We take some saline. We take a needle tip of like a – or not a needle tip.
AngioCath.
Like AngioCath. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And we, you know, irrigate them, and we try to get all this pus out. And guess what? That doesn't help either. It doesn't lead to a better – it doesn't lead to a lower failure rate or anything else. It's pretty much the same. So why do we do all this stuff?